Baseball fans, think you know who's hitting a homer today? Well, FanDuel is giving you a free chance to call your shot with daily dingers. Joining the action is easy. Just make your free pick on who's hitting a home run in their game, and if you're right, you'll get a profit boost to use on your next bet for a chance at extra winnings. You've got nothing to lose and a lot to gain. And don't forget, you can make a free pick every day during the MLB season. It's just another reason why FanDuel is the home for home runs. So, are you ready to play your game today? Join all the action at FanDuel.com/podcast. That's FanDuel.com/podcast to play daily dingers and make your free pick on who's hitting a homer. Play ball and swing for the fences on FanDuel, an official partner of the MLB.
Must be 21 plus and present in Ohio. First online real money wager only. $5 first deposit required. A bonus issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire 7 days after receipt. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
And we are live. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. I'm one of your co-hosts, Blake Ruffino. Alongside me is my counterpart and co-host, Joe DeLeon. Good evening, good sir. How are you?
I'm doing great. I'm excited to continue back on with our preview series that we've been doing. I don't know about you, and I know I always say stuff like this. I feel like once we hit the end of May, I'm a little sad for hitting the end of May or the end of April and going into May, because then there's no football anymore. There's no spring practices, and then we're back into speculation season fully. I'm just trying to take advantage of it, Blake.
It is finally some downtime for people like you and I, but I do think things do start ramping up a little bit here as things do go on, Joe. Mainly due to the point that you have a situation where you're kind of start getting out of spring. You got a lot of things going on post spring. And really after, well, let's just say, you know, June starts rolling around here, Joe, you really start picking things up after baseball, because SEC Media Days will be here. Big Ten Media Days will be here. There'll be a lot of storylines that start coming out post the draft mainly.
Right. The post-draft is going to kind of be entering that gap of anything that's happening for us to talk about as much. But we're trending towards, and we're starting to hit this stride with these teams that we've been breaking down. And today's show, when we're talking about USC, I tell you what, I've mentioned this before. I've alluded to it before. I'm going to be quite bullish on this USC team. And anyone who's going to, I'm not going to mention this during the preview, anyone who ever likes to claim that I'm biased, I'm the biased Notre Dame fan on this show. I hype up Miami and I hype up USC. I don't want to hear anyone say that I've got any bias with some of the stuff that I'm about to be bringing up on our preview later.
No, it might be me who has more questions on USC than most. Mm-hmm. Because quite frankly, I do have questions. Lemon's not there anymore. Who is going to be that receiver that steps up? I mean, we got a lot to talk about receiver. Max Bowen is someone that everybody in the country wanted. Yeah, tight end. How big of an impact does he make as a freshman? We will discuss on that. But USC, they do turn around and do return a lot of key pieces here. And then DeAnton Lynn leaving. How does that impact them defensively? Fitzgerald leaves. So we got a lot to discuss when it comes to the USC Trojans. We'll get into that as well. We'll also get into Jordan Seaton. There's been a lot coming out about Jordan Seaton over the last couple of days. Joe, I've been out there the last 3 days that Lane has allowed us. So we can talk about Jordan Seaton as well. Body kind of looking a lot different. I do think that you have a pretty big how do I want to say this? You have a really big heavyweight battle between him and Prince Will going on every day at practice. So we'll get into that a little bit as well here too. But we got to start off tonight's show with this, and that Steve Sarkisian's words on Arch Manning. But before we do get to that, Joe, do us a favor. Everyone not named Joe, do us a favor. Hit the like and share to all those groups if you're on Facebook and to all those social media pages. You're watching us, listening to us on YouTube. Like, subscribe, notification bell, wherever you listen to podcasts. Rate, review, and subscribe. It does seem, Joe, that we're having some issues with Facebook because, of course,
yeah. I don't think it's going to connect. I would just.
Yeah, we just go on there. But you can do us a favor if you're on YouTube and hit that subscribe button and notification bell. We really do appreciate that. Do us a favor. Go over to wherever you listen to podcasts, rate, review, and subscribe as well. Every Ruffino and Joe show is brought to our good friends over at FanDuel. Download the FD Sportsbook app today. Use your mobile device in doing so. When you download the FD Sportsbook app today, We also suggest every single time, do us a favor, go to FanDuel.com/RG, set your preferences, and set those details. Again, FanDuel.com is the place to be with our good friends and partners over at FanDuel. All right, Joe, let's get rolling here. Steve Sarkisian came out with some big words this week and said that Arch Manning very well may be the most underpaid quarterback in college football. There have been reports out there that he is anywhere between $5 to $6 million with NIL and TV rev share. But Steve Sarkisian saying that Arch Manning is by far the least paid quarterback in the country. I think everybody knows what he meant by he should be getting paid more based off of his skill set and his name, image, and likeness. Joe, what are your thoughts on Steve Sarkisian, the Texas head coach, talking about his quarterback and him being quote unquote underpaid?
Yeah, Chris Lowe brought this up on Andy and Ari. It wasn't a direct quote from him, but he stated to Andy and Ari that he believes that he's the most underpaid quarterback in college football. And like, I get what Sark's trying to say. If they're talking from like a pure revenue sharing standpoint, NIL standpoint from the university, he's probably not getting paid as much as Sam Levitt, as Brendan Sorsby's making, probably not as much as Josh Hoover. Julian Sain might even be making more than him. I think that one, Arch not having been on the open market probably influences that. But like, we can't act like the dude who's in the Viore ads and the Warby Parker ads isn't making more than most of the college football world. The way that guys make money is different from player to player. Arch Manning's the most recognized and well-known name in college football. If I walked into a bar and I just walked up to random people and asked them how much college football they watched, and I asked the ones that said not really that much, and I told them to name one player, if they just had to spit one out, they would all say Arch Manning. So I get what Sark's trying to say. I know he's trying to hype up his dude. Yeah, is he extremely talented and not paid as much as the elite top guys in terms of direct payment? Sure. But I don't think that Arch is hurting for money and he's doing something so vastly generous because he's doing it from the kindness of his heart to help his teammates.
So I don't disagree with you there. Now, the Mannings have been very active in the NIL deals and giving it to charity. They've shown and been in Fort Worth or Fort Wright and outright coming in reference to those situations, and those situations being that they have wanted to in the past to use NIL from name, image, and likeness and to give it to charities. Now, we don't necessarily know specifically if they're actually doing that. I would assume that he's making money. I would assume. And I would assume he's making a lot of money. But here's my thing with what Sark was saying. Joe, I actually agree with him. Let me tell you why I agree with him. Do you remember when Ohio State and Texas faced off? And everybody and their mama was ready to come out and call Arch Manning the bust. He was the face of not college football. Mm-hmm. He was the face of football in general. And every time he struggled, he became the face of college football. See, in college football, we have something interesting that the NFL does not have. Do you want to know who the superstars are in college football? Yes, you can say the players, but the players are only there for a short amount of time before they move on. You know, Joe Burrow or Fernando Mendoza or Cam Ward, name these big, Jeremiah Smith. Like, Jeremiah Smith's not a college football star at the end of this year. He's going to be an NFL superstar. Coaches are the superstars in college sports and college athletics. Until you come to Arch Manning. Because Arch Manning, when he walks into any college football room, steals the show. I will remind you, they were in a playoff game 2 years ago, and Quinn Ewers and him were sitting at the podium, and no one's talking to Quinn Ewers, and they walk up to Arch Manning. So what does that mean? Joe, how much revenue does he bring Texas because of that logo, because of who he is? And we've seen this in the past with massive superstars, Jeremiah Smith, Joe Burrow, you name them, they have done it. So I do wonder if he means that his real market value share is not necessarily where it needs to be because of the attention that he brings with his name, image, and likeness. What does Sark know that we probably don't? How many deals has he turned down? He didn't turn down Raising Cane's. I mean, you can't live inside the state of Louisiana and watch any TV station during the news, the 6 or 7, 8, 9, 10 o'clock news, and there's not an Arch Manning, what do you call it, commercial. Mm-hmm. I mean, Joe, I live in the state. He's from the state. Every single hour, there's an Arch Manning Raising Cane's commercial.
I actually haven't seen these commercials, and they don't obviously play them up here. I haven't seen a single Arch Manning Raising Cane's commercial
like
once.
There's seven of them. There's one with Cooper in the driveway at the local, the first Raising Cane spot where Todd Graves is giving him, or Todd Graves is sitting in the back seat and Cooper Williams is telling Garrett Nussmeier that his daddy called in his order for him because he doesn't trust him in the pocket. I mean, it's kind of funny, but I get what he's saying, because do you remember the Wall Street Journal article post Texas Ohio State calling him a bust?
Yeah.
Joe, that got like 10 million impressions. Yeah, I think the dude is a superstar. So do I agree with him in reference to the traffic that he brings? Yes. But I don't think he really cares about that. I think he cares about being really good, winning at Texas, and becoming the number one overall pick.
I think that what this conversation for me, that it piqued my interest. It kind of goes in line with the conversation that we had with Jeremiah Smith last week, which is evaluating where he should fit, in the quarterback market. This is one thing. There's zero reason for how much in total a player is making for that to be public. There's zero reason. And it'll probably never come out. But selfishly, I wish that there was, because it would be kind of fun and cool to debate who deserves to be getting paid the most. We do it all the time in the NFL. It's a very easy, compelling topic. Every time somebody gets a new contract, it's like, man, this guy shouldn't be getting paid more than X player. And then it allows you to kind of go through that delineation between who fits in what slot of position rankings.
Mm.
But I think that for Sark's point of, you know, he's the most underpaid. Right. But comparing him to the rest of the field, the question I'll ask you is,
it's unfair to the field.
Well, is there anybody out there that you think would be justified in making more than Arch Manning? Whether it's a youngster based on potential, whether it's somebody that's around the same age as him. Like, should we believe that Dante Moore should be making more money? So then you think that Arch should be that highest paid quarterback?
Because of how college does money, yes. Because of name, image, and likeness, yes. No one's a bigger star from a player standpoint that drives clicks more than Arch Manning. No one. There's not a player out there. It's not even like, let me say this. There's a coach that does this. It's Deion, right? Like, Deion drives clicks, and Deion's had a lot of very interesting words these past couple of days about media. I'm going to leave that there. But in that, Joe, that got massive traffic. Why did that generate massive traffic? Because he's a superstar as a player. I just don't know if there's a player that when they put their foot down and they say something or they do something, Arch Manning's under a microscope. Like, for an example, the Rolex watch thing or the watch thing that he did. Joe, he put that out on Twitter during last summer, and it got 20 million views. There's not another athlete right now in college athletics that can do that, because everybody was sharing it. Everybody was talking about it. Everybody was bringing it up. Why? It's Arch freaking Manning. That's why. So from an NIL standpoint, no. The only other person who I think remotely came close to him was Livy Dunn. She's on the cover of Sports Illustrated. She's getting paid $5 million for a Sports Illustrated cover. That's literally the only one. But Joe, she's on the cover of all these makeup magazines. She's now in Baywatch. I mean, like, this is different. He's a different kind of breed of superstar. It's like the Johnny Manziel effect, but Johnny was good, you know, and Johnny did a lot of things. I just believe that nobody collectively drives the market that we're in, by the way, from clicks and views more than he does. Nobody. Because you know what? Me and you could come out here and do five segments of Arch Manning, and they're going to do good. We do one on Dante Moore or some other quarterback. It will do fine. It's not Arch Manning level.
No.
It's not Arch, because everybody wants to know what everybody's talking about with Arch. I mean, Joe, you've had multiple quarterbacks hurt during the offseason, right? Starting quarterbacks. What's driving more, the Arch Manning injury or every other one?
It's all been Arch.
So to Sark's point, I don't disagree with him with the value of what he brings. Now, you know what we hadn't talked about? You didn't ask me about on the field. If we're strictly talking about on the field, yes, I'm with you. I don't think he generates more money than everybody in college football. But we ain't just talking about on the field. That's not what you're asking me. That's not what he's saying.
Right. I think that like now with Arch just in general, he's now officially going to or expecting that he's going to enter into the tier with the way that he finished the season, that the on-field performance matches the name recognition. It's not just purely based off of who he is as a player and this gigantic persona that's been built up for him. I think overall, and we already did our quarterback rankings, but to a degree to kind of rehash them, he deserves to be driving the discussion as the number one quarterback in the country.
Oh, no.
And I still kind of find myself annoyed by people when they step into this conversation and say, well, we did this last year. Are we really going to go through and do this all again? It's very different than last year. Going into the season, he didn't have any experience, nor did he have any opportunity to build confidence. Stepped right in and played Ohio State. Most quarterbacks that played well last year had plenty of a lead up, had plenty of time to slowly work their way into getting comfortable and really hitting their stride.
Yeah, Dante Moore actually started before he started.
Yeah. The only guy that you could argue that did not have that and played at the highest level that might be contending with Arch for who's the best quarterback in the country is CJ Carr. CJ Carr got thrown into the fire against Miami. And he played better against Miami than Arch did against Ohio State. And he played really well against Texas A&M.
Well, and I don't think CJ Carr moves the – I mean, again
– He doesn't move the needle from that perspective.
And that just goes to show, like, again, Joe, we could come out here and we could run on – let's just use Twitter – me and you could do a video on Twitter talking about Arch Manning, and everyone's going to stop and say, what's going on with Arch? They may be interested with CJ Carr, Dante Moore, Dylan Raiola, who had a touchdown pass that Oregon showed on Twitter. Mm-hmm. Everybody wants to pile on how good or bad Arch is. Joe, everybody wants him to fail, right? Like, look at what happened week one. They want to see him fail. Did you ever see the movie Air about how they recreated the Michael Jordan, Matt Damon?
Yes.
Remember when Matt Damon in that movie was like, Michael, they're going to build you up to something that no one can touch, and then they're going to tear you down because that's how we do sports. Joe, he was the second coming of Jesus Christ. We just got done with Easter. He was the second coming of Christ. And then all of a sudden he didn't have a bad game. He had an average game, and they were ready to call him a bust after one start. And that's the thing is, like, whether it's good, bad, or indifferent, he drives the market. Joe, again, from superstardom, there is nobody in the country who has more superstardom more than Arch Manning because of his uncles, because of his dad, because of his grandfather. It just doesn't exist. I didn't think he was the number one player coming out of high school. I told you this. We were started the show by then. I did not remotely come close to thinking he was the number one player coming out. I was like, if his name was Art Smith, he'd be a five-star, but he wouldn't be this. He wouldn't be the number one overall player. But that also propels him to, like, if you have an NIL conversation with him, where do you think that generates? Where do you think that starts? It doesn't start at a very low number, I promise you that, and it's probably the highest or should be valued at the highest. So.
Right.
We're not even talking, and the crazy thing is, which Joe, do you want to talk about on the field and his injury? I mean, like, we haven't even gotten to Arch. Like, we haven't even touched that. And so when we start getting into the summer, I say June, July, and August, those are the conversations that we're going to have. I just don't disagree with Sark on this. I don't see how anybody could be disagreeing with him.
I don't so much disagree with him. I just think that the premise to me is a hair ridiculous because he's trying to make him out to be like he's like, oh, he's not getting anything, but he's, as you just talked, we just named ridiculous amount of sponsors that he has that are big, gigantic, well-known brands. So it's not like even if he's making less than the top three guys right now, and I don't know who those players are, he's still making a lot of money.
Well, here's the thing. I don't think he's the highest paid quarterback in the country, nor do I think he's the highest paid athlete. Deserves it.
I would bet if we were able to calculate just NIL value in terms of his brand, he probably generates the most.
Oh, he'd be in the 10
million.
Talking
about revenue sharing number, like what he got from his revenue sharing, it's probably not as high. And that's something that he's talked about, is that Arch didn't want to be given a huge contract. He wanted that money to be able to go elsewhere. We did a segment on that a while ago, how right. He wanted that money to go towards other players.
Yeah, he wanted, you know what he did? Let's be blunt. That money went to Cam Coleman. It's a smart move.
Yeah. Spend your money on somebody who's going to make you look better.
Yeah. Hey, Arch, throw the ball to Cam Coleman. I mean, like, that is just that is his weapon. Throw it to Hollywood Smothers out of the backfield. I think you'll be fine. All right. Let's move forward here. So, Joe, we continue on our path of deep dives. We go out to Los Angeles. Got to be honest with you. I'm really excited about this one because USC coming off of a really good season, regardless of people saying, oh, they went 9-4. Well, they went 9-4. And Joe, you and I during last season, to kind of recap that just a small tidbit before we move over into this season, Lincoln Riley kind of got questioned a lot. Should he be fired? Is he on the hot seat? Joe, the truth of the matter was they were one of the more physical teams in the Big Ten. And they kind of proved a lot of people wrong with a really young roster. Well, now this young roster, who's got a lot of pieces returning, returns. King Miller returns. Jaden Maiava returns. You got a lot of pieces on the long, your defensive line that returns. But now that we are going into a new season with Lincoln Riley at USC, what are your thoughts going into the season, and how do you see the season panning out for USC?
Like, they have plus 4,000 odds to win a national title this upcoming year. Their win total on FanDuel is set at 8.5, by the way. Blake, I got to be honest with you, man. I think that they've got some of the best value for a team that you could put a future on right now to win a national championship. I don't know if a national championship is like purely going to be in their sights, but Blake, if there was an unexpected team this time last year, we did not believe that Indiana was going to be able to win a national championship. We thought that they could be pretty good. We talked a lot about a lot of the things that they were bringing back and all the new faces and why they could be a really good team. It took until the Big Ten championship game for us to really, really take them seriously as a national title contending team. To me, USC is one of the most underrated teams in this discussion. We can talk about Lincoln Riley's inability to step up in big games as a part of this conversation. But if we're talking about all the positive green lights that you try to uncover when evaluating teams that can succeed, USC has it. This is not a Clemson or a Penn State that's getting overhyped. I hear no one talking about USC for the most part. Like, they're bringing back, this is the most important thing to me, 15 returning starters from last year.
Yes.
15. You know how many teams in the country have more players than that coming back? Zero. There is no team in the country that has more returning starters from last season than this USC team. And the thing that is the most shocking about all this, and I don't know of any other team that can tout this, I'm pretty sure that they're bringing back an entire starting offensive line.
They are.
Now, their offensive line was a bit inconsistent last year, Blake.
Despite, but boy, they got better when the season went going.
Right. that is why I think that like you're bringing back a group that finished the year strong, that has good chemistry with one another. That is a massive, massive positive sign. Like the lastly, in terms of this roster, I really think that Jaden Maiva deserves more recognition for what he can do for this Trojan squad. I think that Maiva showed a lot of really positive, promising things last season. Mm-hmm. I think that there were a couple of times where he took a step back, but he has the skill set to succeed in Lincoln's system. His first year getting to play when he took the job from Miller Moss, it was a little rough. This past year, he started to look fantastic. Third year in the system, second season as the starter. This is a chance for him to take the Big Ten by storm. Last season, he had a 4.6 turnover-worthy throw percentage, which is a pretty good number. But the thing that I think tells the story of who Jaden Maiva is that he only had an 8.2 pressure-to-sack ratio. This is a kid who's great at navigating the pocket. He's great under pressure. He's going to find his teammates, and he's going to deliver to them. Like, I think that when you've got a quarterback like Maiva and a coach who knows how to set him up to succeed, this is the recipe for a team that goes on to win at least 10 games, and maybe go on a run during the college football playoff.
We're going to get to their schedule in a little bit. They got a very tough schedule, early. So remember that when we get there. You talked about Maiva last there, so I want to bring him up first since you talked about it. How do you replace Lemon? I think will be a massive question mark for them. Now you bring in Terrell Anderson from NC State. There was a lot of receivers that you are returning there, and can one of these freshmen like Booby Feaster, can they somewhat emerge? I agree with you. There were a lot of times last season that Jaden Maiva saw a lot of really special things. He made a lot of really big throws. He threw a lot of big touchdowns. He escaped a lot of pressure that he was under. But going into year three of this offense, year two as a starter, there's one thing he's got to do. He's got – Joe, what am I about to say? You know what I'm about to say.
What?
No, you tell me. Because you know me well enough. What am I about to say?
I don't know what you're about to say. What are you about to say?
Okay, fine. You can't have double-digit interceptions.
Yeah.
Because it's exactly what you had a season ago. I don't think he played bad. But I do think that there were times in critical situations versus critical opponents, he turned the ball over too much. So what's going to separate you from being – Joe, what separates you from being 9-3, which you were last year, to being 10-2? You can't have double-digit interceptions. I mean, it is that thin of a line. You cannot do it. But he started getting better at the end of the season. Why did he? Well, they return a big-time running back duo. King Miller last year had 157 carries for 972 yards and 8 touchdowns. Well, it's not the only one return. Wayman Jordan returns. Mm-hmm. Joe, they started getting physical, more physical at the end of the season. And they did a lot of really freaking good things in the run game. Who is going to be that guy on the outside that can step up? Because you have an offensive line that's returning. They showed a lot of promise at the end of the season, and they ran the ball very effectively. But here would just be my question. Do you get what you expect from Mark Bowman, the big-time tight end? Because, Joe, that is a piece that I do think has been missing a little bit in Lincoln's offense. How is the turnover defensively going to play out with De'Anton Lynn out, but you have a lot of pieces that are returning? Fitzgerald, who had 5 interceptions last year, is also not there. So can they start playing more complementary football? And is this the year that USC finally takes that step? I think that they're on the cusp of doing something really good, but they do have a pretty brutal schedule in the Big Ten here that could limit them and them being back to 9-3. If they can't eliminate the turnovers, if that wide receiver core doesn't have somebody that steps up, and defensively, if they continue to allow big plays like they did last season, it will be very detrimental for them.
Before we do talk about that schedule, though, you mentioned Bowman, and he's a guy that like I have my eyes very closely on because I was blown away when I watched his tape as a high schooler. I mean, this is as close to the next iteration of Brock Bowers as we can get. The kid is super smooth. He's physically put together, which is very hard to come by from
a high school kid that's making the jump to college football. Brock Bowers stepped right in and was immediately impactful. Immediately impactful. The way that he was able to play for that Georgia team in some of their biggest games as a true freshman, it was almost one of those things where a lot of times early on, it was like, who's this kid? Who's this kid wearing 19? This kid's a tight end and he's moving like that? Bowman is that smooth and that explosive of an athlete. And I think that you bring up a really good point. They haven't really had that type of a player at tight end. They've had some good athletes, but they haven't had a guy like Bowman that I think that can like really, really take over. The other player that I'm interested by, I don't know if he gets on the field, and I don't know if it's mostly bluster.
Are you because say of Boogie Feaster, just so you can say
No. Luke Waifel, who New Jersey kid, he's gone viral a couple times because there's just been videos of him walking onto the field, and this is an 18-year-old kid who looks like he's 28. He looks like he has been playing in the NFL for like 6 years. And he looks jacked out of his mind. He's got the craziest frame that you can see for a freshman. I implore you to look it up. I don't know if he gets on the field. I have no idea. But there's a lot of hype for this kid being a former five-star. And it goes in line with where I think that this USC team needs to step up and where their success is going to come through. We have seen a gradual growth and progression from them defensively, especially with the way that they've played through their lines of scrimmage. But now, with D'Anton Lynn gone and Gary Patterson coming in, being a longtime head coach, having that type of like mature veteran leader presence in this coaching room that is going to be huge for them, I think. I don't think there's going to be much of a drop-off, but getting a guy like Waifel and then having Jakeem Stewart and Jamal Jarrett there in that room as guys that could potentially become better and better players, I think that they need to show that they're officially, there's a lot of talk, that they're physically ready and are actually able to go through a full season of being physical up front. Because we saw it in some games, but then there were others where they didn't finish and they just didn't play as we thought they were going to. It was too inconsistent. It feels like this is a bit of the culmination with the way that they've been recruiting the past couple of years.
Ready to level up? Chumba Casino is your playbook to fun. It's free to play with no purchase necessary. Enjoy hundreds of online social games like blackjack, slots, and solitaire anytime, anywhere with fresh releases every week. Whether you're at home or on the go, let Chumba Casino bring the excitement to you. Plus, get free daily login bonuses and a free welcome bonus. Join now for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Play Chumba Casino today. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. TNCs apply.
To be fair on Waifel, he's one F away from being a waffle, by the way. I just had to, I think it's
Waifel. I don't think it's pronounced waffle. I think it's not.
It's Waifel.
Okay.
However, to your point, you brought in 30 plus true freshmen. Now you had Vlad at left tackle. That you're talking about the viral clip that happened over the weekend where it was the left tackle versus him. Joe, this freshman class has been turning heads. When you bring in that many players, someone's going to stand up and do something.
Yep.
They do have a lot of explosiveness and talent along their defensive line. You know, I do ask, I mean, I know that Desmond Stevens returns, but you do bring in or you do bring back Jakeem Stewart, but Shelby and Crawford, who combined last year for 10 sacks, my question would be, can they take that next step along their defensive line? I thought D'Anton Lynn really kind of started getting them going. You talked about Patterson. My question with them is who's going to be that safety role? You have Urlacher, who is, you know, on the depth chart. Yeah. Who wins that other safety role replacing Fitzgerald will be interesting. But
Kamari Ramsey, by the way, too, is correct. Also just adding there, too. That's another big loss.
Correct. But can they continue to be better along their defensive line? Who, again, I thought this team just kept getting better. And so does Waifel, does Stewart. Like, Jakeem Stewart's got to have a massive year here. Joe, there's some thought that he's going to, as you brought up, probably going to move into the inside in that three tech. If that happens, how good can he be there will be the question. But there are so many pieces returning for them defensively that I'm not telling you that you need to get stops every single week and every single possession, but you need to start getting more. But I will say this. I thought USC defensively last year was a lot better than the statistics led on. Okay, I thought that, by the way, to MR Nobody, we're not USC fans.
No. He's talking about there's USC fans in the chat. It's not talking about us.
I thought he was talking about us. To that point, I thought Maiava and them offensively put way too much pressure on them. Joe, 10 interceptions a lot. It's a lot. And for you to get a critical stop against Notre Dame. Joe, Notre Dame, for what it's worth, like that Notre Dame game, going back to – Joe, they made a lot of stops and held Notre Dame to a lot of field goals last year where they gave them the ability to win. Again, this is going to come down to is – you know, you said this last week and it was so true. How many times are we going to talk about the season where, hey, the quarterback has got to step up. He had a really good season, but there are things that he's got to clean up. You can't have ending games like Notre Dame, and in that game specifically, Joe, it's going to keep you out of the playoffs, right? Like, it's keeping you out of that game, and those late turnovers kept you out of the playoffs last year. Do we want to be blunt? The double reverse pass with Lemon, dumb call. The interceptions by Maiava. Joe, you're a win away from going to a playoff. You're a win away. So can you build off of that, though, will be the question. But defensively, I thought they were a lot better than people gave them credit for. If they were to limit those turnovers and the defense gave them the stops that they needed, does that one game fortune turn? And look, the schedule's a little bit more brutal than it was a season ago.
Well, so I think that this is the most important thing with this, by the way, with Lincoln. And I think that for all the kind of hype that we're generating here for this USC team this upcoming season, I think we do need to address the elephant with this.
Which
this
is
the
what?
Best team that he's had. This is the best team that Lincoln has had.
Do you think it's the best team since the first year? You don't think the first year with Caleb Williams?
Yeah, because I thought that was all Caleb. I thought that was like Caleb was doing a hell of a lot to bail them out. I think that this roster has more talent across the board and is more balanced, has better depth. The freshman that's class fair. That's coming in, I think, loads up that depth. I think that with the very least, second best team.
Well, look at their offensive line. I mean, they've got a lot of depth there. Yeah.
At the very least, second best team that he's had, whatever. If they don't get to the playoff with this team, then I think that the conversation about Lincoln is completely different. I think that we need to recognize when you have put together a roster this good and you are at the forefront of the conversation of one of the better teams in the Big Ten, you can't go another year without reaching the college football playoff. He hasn't gotten there with USC. The pressure is on Lincoln, and it all comes down to this upcoming season, which we'll eventually get to their schedule in a second. If they can't win big games and they can't finish, they will fall short, and Lincoln will continue to ride into that overrated category. But this is a real prove-it year for him. He's done everything right to set himself up to succeed. It's just a matter of, do the results translate? Do they finally come to fruition?
Well, and I think he bought himself more time with that freshman class. If they continue to stack those, I think they'll be a lot better. But look, this, you know, I don't like putting it on one player. Maiava has got to stop turning the ball over. They got to stop turning the ball over. I mean, Joe, look, you're going to disagree. They had the ability to beat Notre Dame last year. You can't turn the ball over. I mean, we were talking about, remember that post game with them? You and I were talking about, man, Notre Dame's got an issue with lining up for field goals. They can't make them. Mm-hmm. Well, no shit. Well, what if it happens to a situation where you don't turn the ball over and you hit your field goals? Joe, they win that game.
Well, they win that game if they know how to play in the rain. I don't keep it that simple.
That's stupid, true, pass that
Mekhi Lemon tried to throw.
I'll bring up another one. You go into Illinois and get curb stomped. I mean, those things can't happen. So, again, they have the talent and the ability to be there, but their schedule is very tough. Do you want to get to it there, Joe?
Yes. So to read off their schedule, as we always do, there's three different buckets for how we break down these, or I break down these games and categorize these. Should be wins, games that they're supposed to win, tough matchups, games that are going to be hard, but they theoretically should probably win, but could drop, and then toss up games where it's going to go either way. Should be wins, San Jose State, Fresno State, Louisiana, at Rutgers, at Wisconsin versus Maryland. Tough matchups versus Washington. At Penn State,
And I'm sure that Penn State's going to try and make that an early kickoff. And at UCLA, we don't really know what UCLA is going to be. It's a rivalry game. They should beat UCLA, but that has always been a game, especially with Chesney could be first year. Nico could be pretty good. It's a compelling team to bring up. Separate conversation for a different day. The toss-up games is where this gets awfully messy, Blake, because there's three really, really hard matchups. They get the benefit of hosting two of these opponents versus Oregon, versus Ohio State, and then they go to Indiana. I got to be super blunt. I don't think they're going on the road and beating Indiana. Not that Indiana's some super hard place to play, but if that is an early kick, it smells like the Illinois game did a year ago. But if I could be convinced that they can steal a game against Oregon or Ohio State, if I have either of them overlook USC, I think it's possible for them to steal that game. It's going to be hard, but it's plausible for them to steal one of those. The Indiana game, I think, is going to be the decider on if they go to the college football playoff or not.
Well, they got to win a big one, and they can't slip up against somebody. I'm not really worried about them beating either Ohio State and Oregon or Indiana, because I think that they can do it. Mm-hmm. My problem is, do you have a situation versus Washington where you slip? Penn State, you go on the road and slip, because then there is no margin for error.
Well, there's shit. We could go further down and say, like, we don't know when the early kickoffs are going to be. We don't know when the games are supposed to kick off. Theoretically, Penn State could be a late kick.
Well, they can kick off at 6 a.m. against Wisconsin, and they're going to kick their teeth in.
Well, yeah, I think that they should be Wisconsin. But I was gonna say whatever theoretical situation that maybe we overlook it, and then this has been Lincoln's problem is that he loses games that there's always a dud in there. Illinois was supposed to be a team that they were supposed to be much better than.
The only pushback I'm going to give you is that Indiana game comes after they've already played Ohio State. And after they've already played Oregon, here's another thing about the Indiana game. They have 2 weeks to prepare for it.
That is a benefit.
It is a massive benefit. So I do wonder, how Indiana's going to be. You know, like, does complacency set in? Is there a sigh of relief that, you know, I expect them to go undefeated again in the regular season. I mean, that would be kind of chaotic. I mean, then we would get into NCAA 26 level territory of what they're doing up there in Indiana. But they're going to have to win one of the big three and then not slip up against anybody else. But here's the thing. You have a senior-led quarterback. You have a lot of guys returning, and you should be able to understand the significance of where you're at. It's going to come down, Joe. Does Jaden Maiava start turning the ball over like he did a season ago? Bottom line. I mean, bottom line.
I do agree that that's important, limiting turnovers for quarterbacks. I do think I will say for the amount of turnovers that he had, it's very rare to see the amount of interceptions that he threw to have a turnover-worthy throw percentage as low as his was. 4.6 isn't an otherworldly number, but it just means that he had bad turnover luck. That means that when he did make a poor choice,
he made it ultimately really bad.
Right. There are some guys that I've evaluated for the upcoming draft. I've been looking into leaning into certain numbers like this more when I've been evaluating guys. And there's some guys that didn't have that very many interceptions that number was like close to six because they were just chucking and praying and they kept getting lucky with guys that were dropping the ball.
Can you do me a favor?
Yes.
You get a chance. Can you look at – I wonder if they have that for Brett Favre. Like his
– They don't have stats that old. Okay. At least I don't think.
Because every pass damn near might have been interceptable.
That was a different era, man. That was a different era. The one thing I want to bring up, though, before we move on.
Okay.
One thing that I was kind of compelled by when I was reading on the 247 page for USC, there was a quote in there, and there was a bit of one article that I was reading that was talking about Lincoln's attention to finding different ways to stress his team. And I found that really interesting because you don't hear a lot of coaches talk like that. And I think also generally, nobody would think that Lincoln Riley is that type of a coach. He's not the hard-nosed guy that, like, we need to really put our team in some serious.
Can I ask you a question?
Yeah.
All right. Has Lincoln started to adapt? Let me give you some reference to this. Number one overall recruiting class. You have stuff coming out of spring camp of him being hard-nosed. I mean, guys can change. People can change.
Like, he's also a young coach, too.
He's also a very young guy. This isn't like, Joe, he was thrown into a situation where, was he ready to be a head coach? I mean, like, he's been a head coach for a long time, so we don't give him the grace. And he was a head coach at two massive programs. But here's just the real truth. He's had USC at a more consistent level than anybody in the last two decades. It's not remotely a hot take. Was it going to take him more time? I mean, did he have to get buy-in? I mean, has the narrative – you talked about the narrative changing if he doesn't get to the playoff. Well, Joe, what the frick if he does? Then what?
Well, that's my whole point with this is a make or break year. And I think just like this is kind of like a funny way to look to this. And I know that I'm being very golf brained when I say this, but you know, Rory breaks through and finally wins the Masters and it's a sigh of relief. And he looked, albeit he almost blew it this year. He was able to win it again because he played so well. Breaking through that barrier, it feels like he keeps getting close and then things skid out of control in the moments where they need to play their best. I feel like there are a lot of positive signs and reading that article talking about how he's trying to test the mental fortitude of his team through unique ways. Sometimes it's not as simple as just, hey, we're going to go full pads and we're going to just hit each other for 90 minutes. It's waking guys up early. It's putting guys through grueling conditioning drills. It's constantly pressing guys in order to pay attention in meetings and also go above and beyond in meetings and do more in film study and all of those things. I feel like as you're talking about here, it does feel like Lincoln is evolving. He's 42 years old. His first version of himself as a coach. I know there are coaches.
You know, when he took his first head coaching job at Oklahoma, he was my age. That's like me being the head coach of Oklahoma. Hold on. Pause.
Yeah.
Imagine your co-host being the head coach of Oklahoma right now.
I'd be scared shitless. That team would be getting run into the ground.
Well, thank you, I guess.
But no, that's not a compliment.
But in all seriousness, think about that for a minute.
There are coaches that, for as long as he's been a head coach, there are guys that get into their – like Cignetti. Cignetti's had less time at the Power 4 level than Lincoln's had at the Power 4 level as a head coach.
Lincoln Riley could be Cignetti's son by age difference.
That's my point.
Right.
He's entering into a completely different era of coaching, and for him, I think, and I think that naturally when we talk about – coach progression, most guys work their way up either through the small school ranks or the coordinator ranks, and he had a different path.
Well, and let's just be blunt about something. At the end of the year, nobody wanted to face them because they were a physical team. They ran the ball very physically. And do they continue to do that will be the question. All right, we spent a lot of time on USC, but it's just the truth. All right, let's move on here. Joe, I'm going to be labeled a homer here. Because this involves...
I suggested this topic.
And LSU players about to get talked about. But this is a topic that you and I have not discussed, but has been making the rounds. Obviously, the number one offensive tackle coming out of the portal this year was Jordan Seaton. Number one offensive lineman in the transfer portal coming from Colorado to LSU with Lane Kiffin. Over the last week or so, there's been a lot of photos circulating about the body transformation, Lane Kiffin's comment saying that he's constantly out there working on his craft. But there's a lot coming out of LSU right now that Jordan Seaton has taken another step and another level, especially with Lane's comments. Your thoughts on Jordan Seaton, and I'll add in some other things as we go along here because we've been out at practice the whole time. Lane has been gracious. He gave us a scrimmage on Saturday. Your thoughts going into the season with Jordan Seaton, but even seeing some transformations in him being with LSU and Lane Kiffin now.
So I wanted to bring this up and talk about this because quite honestly, I wanted to hear your unfiltered thoughts on him because every single time that you and I had sat down pre-show and you had just been coming from practice, you alluded to how impressive Jordan Seaton was. He was the first guy out of your mouth every single time with the unprompted. I didn't even ask you how practice was, and you would tell me, man, Jordan Seaton looks insanely, insanely good right now. Yep. His tape at Colorado was frustrating because when you watched him at Colorado, you saw why he was a five-star. He's got very light feet. He moves really, really well. But just be quite frank, man, he was fat. He was not in good shape. Left tackle can't be fat, man. Left tackle's got to be lean. Guards can be fat. Centers can be a little chunky. Tackles need to be, and I mean, body typing is important when we talk about offensive linemen. You got to be built. Like, you got to be built, and you got to be able to move. And he had a bit of a gut, and it affected his
flexibility. Trent Williams is fat.
Trent Williams is
he's a different beast.
Yeah, he's built different. He's got like an, but he makes up for being fat by the fact that he's gigantic. He's jacked, and he moves really well. But I think that what was holding Seton back from being as good as he could have been was the fact that he wasn't super flexible. And to be quite honest with you, Blake, and I didn't even really talk to you about this with Seton, when he committed to LSU, I thought he was overrated. I fully thought that this kid's getting completely overhyped, and I thought that this is going to be a huge disappointment this upcoming year when he steps onto the field, because the Colorado tape was not that impressive to me because of those issues. Seeing his body look different, and from what you've told me, I don't think that it's just you being excited, because every single article that has highlighted things that are standing out during practices at LSU have constantly brought up how Seton's moving different and he's kicking everybody's ass. So I want to hear more about this, because I'm impressed.
Is Principal Umam yelling good or bad? Is he a good player or a bad player?
He's a good football player.
They're going up against each other every single day and every single rep. So here's my thoughts. If I'm just specifically talking about one individualized player, I think that there are a couple of things for me that stand out. You talked about the body transformation. Well, Joe, he's posting photos at 5 a.m. inside of football ops. Lane says he gets there at 9:30. He's sitting in the individualized room watching film. He's posting Instagram stories of it, so you can't fake it. You can't fake it. There's no faking the work. You can't. Joe, I was 350-plus pounds when we started. Stay with me. You can't fake losing weight. You don't fake it. You don't fake the work that you got to put in. He's the most athletic offensive lineman at LSU I've seen in the last 5 years, bar none. It's not close. Do I think that there are times where, like on Saturday, Prince will hit him with a pretty big move, and he held him, and he ragdolled him, and a holding got called? But that's not what I walked away from. What I walked away from is, damn. He got a holding, but he just ragdolled two defensive ends in back-to-back plays. What I didn't expect from the social media presence of him was the tenacity in the run game. I thought his pad level's been low. I think his hand placement's been fine. Do I think that there are some times in up-tempo where he's been winded? Yes. And I think the conditioning and him having to change has helped him in technique, as weird as that sounds. Because if I have to condition myself over and over and over again to be up-tempo, it's made him better in short spurts. Mm-hmm. I just think fundamentally sound, he is one of the most special athletes in college athletics because of how big he is and how quick he moves. What I am blown away by with him is the run game. I think in pass sets, Prince will get some on him. I think he will win. He's won a lot. And I think it's just been more of how physical he's been in the run game at practice that surprises me. Joe, when we're not talking about offensive line at a scrimmage or practice, it means that you're holding up. And he's holding up. And he's done very well. But I think the thing for me is just how freaking athletic he is. And I think that is what stands out. So when he has to do a vertical set or he has to do a horizontal set and guys are trying to beat him inside and he washes them down. So I can't say what happened, but let me just put this into perspective. We were told that we can get full practices, but we can't talk about schematics. But I think that we're all smart to put two and two together here. there was a play this weekend where he got out in space. And I don't think a guy that size should run a safety down. Well, he did. I don't know how to explain it. Like, I didn't expect that level of athleticism. I didn't. And I didn't expect that level of physicality that came with the athleticism. Do I think there's ways to go and things that he needs to fix? Yes. But I got to be real with you. This offensive line at spring for LSU has held up. It has been timing issues with quarterbacks of why their offense isn't hitting. And so, therefore, I just look at him and say, I think he's done a really good job on Jordan Ross. He's done a really good job on Prince Will. He's done a really good job down blocking and getting to a second level. I just think overall he's been very special, and I think that's why Lane continues to talk. Look, you can take it from me for all you work. Lane don't pump people up just because. That's not the level of coach he is. And take his words for it, too. I think he's just been that special, and how he's ragdolled some guys has been utterly insane. I would say this last thing is I do think that he leans a little too much when he gets tired, meaning leaning with his hips instead of just pass setting. But I think that's going to get fixed. And Eric Wolford's been a really good – I'm going to just say it. Screw it. He ain't at Colorado anymore.
So, look, I know that there's kind of been some tension about like bringing that stuff up, and Deion's kind of responded to it. But separate from him being at Colorado, how
can you compare Colorado to LSU?
I know, it's not the same. And I think that part of this tied to what I'm about to bring up. I've talked to a lot of people that work in football in the media that cover football and have talked about Seton. Seton gets brought up a lot for not a lot of good reasons over the past couple of years. The one thing that you never want to describe an offensive lineman is caring too much about their image. And it really felt like he cared more about what came from the recognition of being a part of the Colorado football program. And like his commitment video was in line with that as well. It felt like a lot of it was about wanting attention. And that's just not a trait for an offensive lineman. And I feel like everyone that I talked to was getting all over him for that. And it feels
that can help him with that.
Yeah. It felt like, Blake, there wasn't much of a belief that he was focused and that he was working. And I think that kind of showed in his physique. I think that now you've got a lot of evidence to prove, while he might be posting that he's there early and he's doing all these things and showing off shape that he's in.
Tom, it's not him posting it. It's Lane.
Oh, never mind then. It's Lane doing it.
Yeah, it's not him posting it.
I think that there's all these very positive, clear signs that his focus is purely on just going and playing football. And I think that there's a lot of maturity that comes with this. And I think that's why we're going to see a massive difference in what he is this season. And he'll probably be considered to be a first round pick.
All right. Everybody has a perception of Lane. I walked into spring having a perception of him. You know, we're walking out of practice a couple of days ago, and I'm walking out, and he's just like, hey, Blake, just want to formally introduce myself. I'm Lane Kiffin. I'm like, in my mind, I'm like, no shit. And I'm like, yeah, I'm Blake Ruffino, you know, and whatever. Can I tell you the perception I have of Lane Kiffin? When he walks in between them white lines, your perception needs to be thrown out the door. Because he don't give two flying shits about who you are. You're going to get to work. And I think that, Joe, I mean, there are players that got paid more money that aren't starting right now. He does not care. And I think Seton had – look, the biggest lie about Lane is that they don't work. Like that they're just for social media and clicks. That's just bullshit. Joe, he's done a really good job. I think Seton has done a really good job in the run game. I just think that he has done he's more impressive of a guy than I thought we were going to get. I thought we were going to get a guy that came out and was lazy. He's anything but. How about this? They ran first team probably 70 plays on Saturday, give or take. I didn't see any change in him. And they're up tempo. And I think that's got a lot to do with it. And let's see if LSU can continue to be physical. So I guess we'll see. I've liked what I've seen. But Deion is Deion, man. And I'm not going to talk about that circus because it is a circus. Welcome to big boy football. Okay. Like I hate to say it like that, but welcome to big boy football. We're not retiring our son's jersey over here.
No.
Right. All right.
No.
I mean, I hate to say it like that, but it's Colorado versus LSU.
Yeah, it's true.
All right. Any super chats? No, just Ohio State. Ohio State and USC fans getting at it in the chat. Okay. I can dig it. Anything else before we get out of here?
No, not anything. We'll be back on Wednesday.
Rafino and Joe show on a rocket ship. That's all I know. We'll see y'all soon. Peace.